It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Was sort of the sound last night, not cheering for the Georgia Bulldogs or the Alabama Crimson Tide, but for the President of the United States as he entered the field, and he walked across the field with something like 5 or 6 soldiers. Pretty amazing, the cheering that went on, and that was last night's college football championship game. I'm sure that none of you know about that game, right? You don't know the game I'm talking about. Oh, yes, I guess you might. And I guess Alabama's Crimson Tide were the victors in that game. But I think it was certainly probably very encouraging response for President Trump on that field. It was Atlanta's Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and I know that there were some boos. There were for sure not loud enough to overcome the cheers, that's for sure. So that's the way the president was received last night. And congratulations, by the way, to Alabama Crimson Tide and all of you Alabama Crimson Tide supporters. All right, so kind of morphing into the next thing, you recognize, of course, that the next attack against the president is because collusion with Russia is not working out so well. So now they're talking about his mental health. So I want you to hear this report from Doug McElwee because it's pretty amazing. Let's listen.
Republicans are pledged to restore and revitalize.
It is informally called the Goldwater Rule, a section of the American Psychiatric Association's guidelines that says it is unethical for a psychiatrist to offer a professional opinion unless he or she has conducted an examination.
It was spurred by Barry Goldwater's run for president in 1964, and psychiatrists as a group were opposed to him, and so they made diagnoses about him that were based on psychoanalytic principles, which we don't use today.
53 years later, Yale University psychiatrist Dr. Bandy X. Lee met with 11 Democratic lawmakers and told them that President Trump is mentally unfit for office. Dr. Lee says she's nonpartisan and didn't break the Goldwater Rule, but rather felt compelled to intervene due to a present danger for the general public. The president took to the very forum that Dr. Lee suggested is part of his problem. He tweeted, "My two greatest assets have been mental stability and being, like, really smart, and a very stable genius at that." The president's senior aides also fought back on the Sunday talk shows.
I'm with him almost every day. He asks really difficult questions of our team at CIA so that we can provide him the information that he needs to make good foreign policy decision.
The president's tweets absolutely reaffirmed the plain spoken truth. A self-made billionaire revolutionized reality TV and tapped into something magical that's happening in the hearts of this country.
The controversy has raised uncomfortable questions about mixing psychiatry with politics.
In fact, there have been studies of psychologists and psychiatrists as a group, and they definitely do lean left of center.
In a country where political divisions are so deep, some fear that could lead to the weaponization of psychiatry.
It's very dangerous. I've railed against the criminalization of political difference. It's getting worse.
In fact, it's already happening. In August, Democratic Congressman Zoe Lofgren introduced a resolution urging the cabinet to have the president examined by a team of psychiatrists. And many Democrats will again be meeting with Dr. Bandy X. Lee this week.
All right, Doug McElwee of Fox. You know, I don't know if you've ever known a billionaire. I've only been around, maybe one in a room with them, close to President Trump, but not in the room with him. So, and I have to say, three come to mind. the three that I have reason to, I know some more millionaires, but not billionaires. But the billionaires that I have, that have come across my radar screen that I would have any knowledge of, have all been weird. They've all been strange. They've all been people, maybe four, I just had another fourth in my mind. Yes. They're all strange. To me, they're all strange. And yet they are so incredibly successful. They just operate in a different universe. That doesn't mean, I'm not saying that they don't have the same, that God does not expect the same graciousness, kindness, good things, compassion, morality. I am not saying that. I'm just telling you that it seems to me that when you have a lot of money, you don't have to explain anything to anyone, and it kind of makes you weird. You think about the stars who become, you know, multi-millionaires and become untethered from reality, like Michael Jackson, and, you know, you fill in the blanks, lots of them. Because I just think there's something about that kind of wealth where everyone around you says yes, everyone around you praises you, because there are, you know, I'm sure there are some exceptions, but not many, because you have so much power because of your wealth. And I think it makes people strange. But it doesn't mean they're crazy. It doesn't mean they're crazy. I don't think this president is crazy. I think he is a narcissist. I said that when he was running. I think that his ego is the thing that may very likely undo him if he is undone. And I'm praying that he isn't, by the way, because in spite of his narcissism, he's doing some really great things for this country. So, and I don't think he's mentally ill, no. I don't think that you could do what he's done and be... I see this pattern of these very, very successful multimillionaire, billionaire men being not forced to be bound by convention or by the norms of human behavior. And they become a little strange. And I can't think of an exception of the four that are in my head right now. So not that that's the definitive study on it. I'm just telling you from my experience. So I don't think there's any part of President Trump that's mentally ill. I think he has too much common sense. He certainly does have common sense on the issues, and he certainly does connect with people. Like when he went to visit the Farm Bureau conference yesterday, he just connected. He connected with farmers. He connects with construction workers. He has something in him that is actually quite normal, even in spite of the abnormality of his life and his past. And by abnormality, I mean not normal to you and me. We've not been raised that way. We've not been raised with that kind of abundance and resource. It's just, even you can't fathom it. So anyway, enough about that. Last night, speaking of billionaires who are strange, then there's Oprah. So let's listen to what's happening with Oprah Winfrey, who now it seems wants to be president. Let's listen.
A new day is on the horizon.
Would she? Could she run?
And when that new day finally dawns, it will be because of a lot of magnificent women.
Oprah Winfrey triggered a political earthquake Sunday night in a speech that rumbled like the beginnings of a campaign.
In the age of Trump, when we've seen that we can have a president without any political experience, there's no reason that Oprah shouldn't think that she could do this.
The positives?
I have one word, one name, and it's Oprah.
For 25 years, Oprah was America's conscience as a daily talk show host. Tough but tender, inspiring, successful but generous.
Oprah G. Winfrey is a global media icon.
Politically, Winfrey could carry the Obama coalition without the baggage of his presidency. The challenge?
I don't know if America is ready for a female president, let alone an African-American female president at that.
And social media users have already adopted Oprah 2020.
We all know that the press is under siege these days.
Winfrey, a sexual abuse survivor, told 20 million viewers sexual harassment and inequality exist beyond the glamour of Hollywood.
They're the women whose names we'll never know. They are domestic workers and farm workers.
Friends close to Winfrey reportedly say she's actively considering a run for the Democratic nomination. Although 7 months ago she told a podcast,
I will never run for public office.
Okay, that's a pretty definitive...
That's a pretty definitive thing.
Last night, however, Winfrey's partner, Stedman Graham, told the L.A. Times it's up to the people. She would absolutely do it.
If Winfrey were to run, she'd enter what is expected to be a wide-open Democratic field. But for now, we'll just have to let the speculation continue.
All right, well, you know, I think Oprah would be... I think she could win. I do. And I don't think that's a good thing. And I don't think it has anything to do with her being black or female. Oprah Winfrey is winsome. You know, her covers are airbrushed. She always looks beautiful and interesting. She seems very gracious. But I'm telling you, when you get in the weeds of who Oprah Winfrey is, it's not good. I think of her movie, Beloved. I don't know if you saw that many, many years ago when it came out in the theaters. It really was, I'm telling you, it was creepy. It was satanic, blatantly. It was dirty. I was really shocked, to be honest with you. I had a much more favorable opinion of her then. That's what came out of her mind, and that's what she wanted to produce, and that's what she worked on. So that's just one thing I could say about Oprah Winfrey and the reason why I would oppose her, not because she's a woman and not because she's black. That's silly. Anyway, but we'll see. I think if she's serious, she has a good shot at it, because I think so many women in this country have foolishly followed her. It's just amazing to me, and that's a whole issue for another conversation on another day. But I want to get to this. Wow. I think I'm not going to be able to play the clip. I think I'm just going to have to jump into this information because it's national security information. We know that Bruce Orr has been the Justice Department official whose wife, Nellie, was involved with Fusion GPS in preparing that dossier on Donald Trump. And Bruce Orr himself met with Glenn Simpson, the founder of Fusion GPS, and Christopher Steele, the former British spy who helped compile it. Bruce Orr, working at the Justice Department while all this was taking place, he's been demoted now from his second position, and he's going to be meeting with the House Intelligence Committee tomorrow. The House Intelligence Committee has received all the documents on the Trump dossier. They were finally turned over. The only exception, they said, was a release that Christopher Wray, the current FBI director, showed to Devin Nunes by himself. Only Devin Nunes was able to view that document. But the other things have been released and includes some amazing things. In fact, I'm not sure this is part of it. I know that there are lots of email between FBI agent Stroke and Lisa Page, who he was having an affair with, who worked. It's just too hard to explain all these connections. But Lisa Page and he were having an affair. They were both working in various capacities to make this connection between Trump and the Russians. And now we have some more of their interactions being made public. The Hill publishes one of them. This is an exchange between them on October 24th of 2016. Article is out but hidden behind paywall, so can't read it, Lisa Page Stroke. Wall Street Journal, boy, that was fast. Stroke texted back using the initials of the Wall Street Journal. Should I find it and tell the team? By the way, the text messages, The Hill says, show the two FBI agents discussed how they might make it appear that they innocently discovered the article, such as through Google News Alerts. I can get it like I do every other article that hits my Google News Alert. Seriously, Stroke wrote, adding he didn't want his team hearing about the article from someone else. So they're busy trying to figure out what these articles are. They have other signs. Now, there's another outlet here. Stroke texted Page about another article suggesting it was an anti-FBI. He said, yep, the whole tone is anti-BU, just a tiny bit from us. The point is, before I get into more detail, and I'm going to try to get a little more in here, it looks as though they were leaking to the press that these agents who were at the top of the food chain in terms of investigating some connection between Donald Trump and also Mrs. Clinton's email. This is so dirty. It really is. Speaking of that word that I used earlier, this is unbelievable. Sarah Carter has written a longer article on it, which she exposes lots of the interactions between them. They talk about a Post article just went up on the Washington Post. They talk about all these articles that it sounds as though, with these exchanges, that they leaked information to various outlets, including the New York Times. That is just unimaginably corrupt. And so remember that FBI Director Comey testified before the Congress that he did not authorize any leaks, but then he himself sent his memos to a friend to leak to the press. And so talk about corruption. But I think, the gig is up, as they say, so we'll stay tuned. By the way, immigration is a huge issue, the DACA issue, so that's what we're going to discuss next. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program that's been around for 25 years, and they have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $1 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money. Think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have a lot to offer? Well, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
A Moment of Truth with Gary Bryden, Executive Director of the Association of Independent Methodists.
James Madison, one of the framers of the United States Constitution, wrote the following in the Federalist Papers. The primary political motive of man was self-interest, and that men, whether acting individually or collectively, were selfish and only imperfectly rational. Madison and other founders understood the dark nature of men when the Spirit of Christ was not within them. For that reason, the Constitution's authors built in checks and balances in each of the three equal branches of our government. Their view has been proven true not only in Scripture, but in the test of time. Their wisdom is proven true in 21st century America.
The Association of Independent Methodists, like-minded congregations doing together what can't be done separately. Visit AIM2020.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Seattle residents are going through sticker shock over a new sugar tax, and they have no one to blame but themselves. Voters approved a massive tax on sodas and sports drinks, anything made with sugar, $1.75 per fluid ounce. While beverage distributors like Coca-Cola and Pepsi will suffer the brunt of the increase, consumers will have to pay some as well. Television station Cairo reports one customer bought a case of Gatorade for $15.99, was charged more than $10 in taxes. Supporters say the new tax will cut down on obesity and diabetes. The tax is expected to raise around $15 million. That money will be used to help people who need better access to fresh fruit and vegetables. But critics say the tax is going to hurt small businesses and cost jobs. This is what a nanny state looks like, folks. They tell you what to eat, they tell you what to drink, and if you don't comply, they tax your Coca-Cola. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We are going to end chain migration. We are going to end the lottery system. And we are going to build the wall.
Now I think it's our responsibility to protect those young men and women, because it's really a fight not only for dreamers today, but for a real sense of fairness in the United States of America.
All right. So first you heard President Donald Trump talking about, about the strong measures he wants to see in terms of changing our immigration system. And then you heard Luis Gutierrez, the open border socialist from Chicago, who works with Paul Ryan to make this happen. And so now we're hurtling toward January the 19th, which is the date where the government will not be funded unless they pass some kind of a budget proposal. And what are they talking about? They're talking about passing amnesty for DACA recipients and other things. I want to refer to Tucker Carlson before I introduce our guest. Tucker did a commentary just a few nights ago, and this is what he pointed out. He said on the diversity lottery, 60% of voters said the diversity lottery ought to be abolished. Only 29% support it. E-Verify, 57% of likely voters say Congress should require E-Verify for all hiring. on legal immigration, we admit about 1 million each year of legal immigrants. 60% of those asked, meaning American citizens, said they'd like to cut that number in half, if not more. And then Tucker says, in political terms, those numbers are huge. Republicans would kill for that kind of support on other issues, all kinds of other issues. Restricting immigration is a lot more popular, for example, than defunding Planned Parenthood or cutting taxes for the wealthy or cracking down on marijuana, bombing distant countries. More popular than all of that. Yet somehow, the opposite is happening. Apparently, a number of Republican senators are prepared to cave completely to Democrats on this question, agreeing to amnesty with no serious concessions in return. Well, Daniel Horowitz joins me this morning. Of course, he's the senior editor for Conservative Review. Daniel is one of the most prolific conservative writers I know. And I don't know how he does it, but he does it well almost every day. Daniel, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Daniel. All right, so let me just ask you a simple question. Let's start with this. Because I'm hearing conflicting reports, do you think, at this point, knowing what you know, that the Democrats will use this whole issue of legalizing the Dreamers to shut down the government on January the 20th?
I mean, the good news is I don't think they will. The bad news is the reason I don't think they will is because Republicans will probably give it to them as a standalone within the next 2 months or so.
All right. Okay, so let's dive into this. Okay, so what's happening? I know that Chuck Grassley did a whole long expose on what's happening with, you know, the bill that he and a few other senators, I can't remember the name of it. I don't have it in front of me. The one that they're not considering, the compromise where they folded in a Dick Durbin proposal in part of it. You know what I'm talking about?
Sure. No, absolutely. Basically, the Democrats want amnesty. They want it now. They want it forever. And they don't want anything for Americans. And I think, Sandy, the biggest thing here is, and this is what I read about in my column yesterday, is all about focus and priorities. Even if you agree in the abstract with some sort of amnesty at some point, what is so offensive about this is that there's a sense of urgency and emergency to grant amnesty when amnesty is the problem. There's no sense of urgency to fix immigration for Americans. What happened to that? When you are an elected congressman, senator, as part of the social contract, your job is to represent the citizenry, not foreign nationals. You might want to legalize them, but they are not American. So where is the sense of urgency to deal with the asylum problem, the refugee problem, the open border, the overstaying of the visas, the lack of employer verification? And then we have, obviously, a diversity lottery, chain migration. These are emergency issues economically, security-wise, for sure, and they should be dealt with irrespective of what you want to do with amnesty. That is the main course. That is the chicken and rice. You want to get your dessert, your amnesty, we'll talk about that after you eat your dinner, as I tell my three sons every night.
I mean, that's common sense. And I you know, when we've talked so many times about this, all of us have discussed why in the world the Congress would set their sights on this. We've always said, and I think it's true and will always be true, that the Democrats want more votes. In fact, I think there was a memo leaked just this morning. I heard about it. The Daily Caller came across a memo written by a Hillary Clinton staffer that said, we must put DACA in the budget deal now because of the votes it's going to generate for the Democratic Party in 2018. So we know what they think. And we've always surmised that Republicans feel the same way. They want to broaden their base. But, Daniel, I also think that it's part of the magic dust that floats around D.C., that these congressmen and senators are so disconnected from the public. All they read is they read the New York Times, they read the Washington Post, they hear the cocktail discussions in D.C., and they honestly think that this is something the American people want. I don't understand that, but would you agree that's contributing to this?
No, absolutely. The echo chamber creates a crisis of values. It creates a crisis of intellect, a crisis of initiative, where their imagination cannot think outside of the contours of debate put before them by the political establishment. So everything is, you know, they come up with these mellifluous-sounding acronyms, DACA, LGBTQF, whatever, you know, and then Republicans will spit back the same parlance, the terminology, the premises, the assumptions. And wait a minute. No one says time out. Why don't we have an American DACA, you know, deferred action from criminal aliens? What about fixing immigration first for Americans, a DACA fix? Well, what about a sovereignty fix? You know, that's the problem with everything. It's all operating, you know, in their universe that they create, and nobody could think outside of it. There's a big crisis in this country from MS-13 now. Guess why? Because of Obama's amnesty in 2014, when we had this surge from Central America, 20% of those arrested, those UACs, you know, the unaccompanied minors, that are, many of them are minors, were MS-13 members. I mean, this is a very big problem that you now have former prosperous suburbs like Montgomery County, Maryland, Nassau County, New York, that are overrun with gangs. This is the crisis, this is the emergency, and this is the responsibilities of members. But unfortunately, they don't hear this anywhere inside that insular air of D.C.
You know, Daniel, you wrote an article just a few days ago before the one. And by the way, we're going to put both of these articles on our Facebook page. The one we're going to get back to in a second is a President Trump don't give in to spoiled children senators on amnesty. And we're going to come back to that in a second. But in your article a few days ago, which is titled, It's Time to Stop Counting Illegal Aliens in the Census, you go back and give some historical context that I had not heard, Daniel. It's pretty interesting. And you quote Justice Joseph Story, by the way, as saying, and this would be in 1833, if aliens might be admitted indiscriminately to enjoy all the rights of the citizens at the will of a single state, the Union might itself be endangered by an influx of foreigners, hostile to its institutions, ignorant of its powers, and incapable of a due estimate of its privileges. That's pretty stunning stuff. Grappling with the same, and they were talking about, as you write here, they were talking about the danger of states being able to, like California is going to be doing now, admit anybody, give sanctuary status, of the effect on the rest of the country. Can you say something about what you found out more about that period of time, what was written?
Sure. And a lot of this comes, you know, the basis from Chapter 8 of my book, Stolen Sovereignty. And you want to talk about literally stealing the sovereignty. Imagine states being allowed to become sanctuaries thwart federal immigration law like California. People come in, unilaterally assert jurisdiction, say, I'm here, and then they force their will on us and get counted in the census. You know, there's a lot of debate over verifying proof of citizenship to vote and photo ID and how many illegals vote or don't vote. But what no one discusses is that no matter what, illegals are essentially voting even without voting because they are counted in the census. So, for example, California, with their sanctuary policies, not only are they costly financially, not only is it a security problem really for all the states, because then they, you know, a California illegal that was given sanctuary killed a sheriff's deputy in Kansas City last year. So this happens everywhere. But there's another problem of crime paying. Crime pays for sanctuary states because the more illegals they attract, the bigger their population is. Did you know that California gets 5 extra seats because of their sanctuary policies and they have such a large population of illegals? This is what Joseph Story was referring to. Why did the Constitution give immigration power to the federal government? It wasn't to prevent states like Arizona from being stricter on immigration. It was the opposite. It was to prevent states from just flooding the entire federal union in order to juice up their representation in Congress. And that is why this business, this practice of counting illegals in the census, is such a violation of the original intent.
Well, you give a stunning stat here in this article. You say it's no surprise that roughly half of all illegal immigrants reside in 5 metropolitan areas, all of which are sanctuary cities. New York City, Newark, Los Angeles, well, New York City, Newark, Los Angeles, Chicago, Miami, and San Francisco, Oakland. That really stunned me. Half of all illegal immigrants reside in those sanctuary cities. That's amazing to me, Daniel. Are you talking about official stats, official statistics?
Well, so here's the thing. There are official statistics from the census, from their American Community Survey. But unfortunately, we don't have statistics from the actual live census data we use to use for reapportionment, for redistricting. And that's why the Trump administration is right to ask for a question on the upcoming census of citizenship, because we need to know district by district. But again, in the subsequent years from this American Community Survey, we usually find that out. And I would just add, Sandy, there's one other problem here. Forget about the fact that many blue states get extra seats because of their sanctuary policies and they have more illegals. But even within the state, there's an inherent unfairness that you could have one district, for example, Los Angeles County area, where there's only 274,000 American citizens, and you could have another district in that same state that has 500,000 citizens. So if you're a citizen living in a highly densely populated illegal alien area, you have more voting power than someone else. This violates the one man, one vote that the Supreme Court has made sacrilege over the years, but no one seems to care.
Yeah, that happens in Chicago and Cook County all the time. Before we leave this article, I want to borrow your quotes just to drive this point home, Daniel. You quote Roger Sherman, who was one of our founders, and he said in a House debate on the Naturalization Act of 1790 that it was intended by the convention, who framed the Constitution, that Congress should have the power of naturalization in order to prevent particular states receiving citizens and forcing them upon others who would not have received them in any other manner. Then he goes on to say the federal control was designed to guard against an improper mode of naturalization and prevent individual states from flooding the country with immigrants based on easier terms. And you go on to quote Madison in Federalist 42. He says the Naturalization Act of that time solved a very serious embarrassment and defect of the Articles of Confederation, which certain descriptions of aliens who had rendered themselves obnoxious can force themselves on several states had they acquired the character of citizens under the laws of another state. The point is, they understood the problem. Our founders understood this problem and were very clear about it, tried to fix it. And you just wonder if our senators and congressmen don't need to sit down for a course on the Constitution yet one more time, Daniel. But back to who's pushing this? Is the House or the Senate more the vanguard on pushing DACA this time?
I mean, it's really the leadership of both parties support it. I would say the Senate is worse. It's going to be the House that's going to stand as the vanguard to stop it. So that's really where we need to make our stand. But I think the best defense is an offense, and Trump needs to go on offense and demand that the budget bill not only not include amnesty, but that it does include defunding sanctuary cities.
Do you think he's going to do that? This is the thing. I can't, you know, how do we know? The president is so hard to read. Now, he has Stephen Miller right by his side, and we both know that Stephen Miller is a hawk on this. He was Sessions' hawk on this, Senator Sessions' hawk, when Sessions was such a strong man in the Senate on this issue. What are your feelings about this? Do you think the president's going to hold fast, demanding these other things in exchange for some sort of amnesty for DACA?
I mean, so far he has been pretty strong on message about the priority being, going after sanctuary cities and asylum reform. He's actually made a list of 18 priorities, which is pretty much the wish list that we've all had for many years.
Yeah.
The frustrating thing over the past year is just that he often doesn't get where the leverage points are, and this is why we've already passed two budget bills that only have Democrat priorities and none of his priorities, and if we still don't have funding for the wall, he has gotten more adamant about that. So that's the thing. I mean, it's just the people around him need to make it clear
right. That,
you know, when they say, oh, well, Republicans don't have 60 votes in the Senate. Well, you know who else doesn't have 60 votes? The Democrats.
Yeah,
they
Daniel.
They don't have the House or the White House either.
Daniel, can you stay with me for a few more minutes because the clock's running out here? Can you stay?
Absolutely.
I want to talk about El Salvador. I mean, I want you to finish your thought on President Trump, and then I want to morph to El Salvador and the ruling that was just made yesterday that's been so controversial. So stay tuned. My guest is Daniel Horowitz. And by the way, we'll put his articles, his latest two, on our Facebook page, and you can read and share them with others. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Jabez was more honorable than his brothers, and his mother called his name Jabez. saying, because I bore him in pain. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Here you have a mother languishing in terrible circumstances. Times were so difficult, she even considered her own son to be a burden. Not only that, she named the boy Sorrowful or Pain because she saw his birth as another setback. But the scripture shows us, though the boy was born into less than ideal circumstances, he zoomed beyond predetermined expectations. Regardless of the conditions you're born into, God can empower you to transcend your environment. Though his mother called him Pain, God called him Honorable.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
The financial world certainly can be intimidating, and our livelihood, of course, depends upon it, but God is in control of all things. Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. I take your calls every day and give you answers from a biblical perspective and break down the day's financial numbers to help keep you informed. Financial Issues every weekday morning at 8 o'clock Central Time and Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock Central Time on American Family Radio.
As a 10-year-old boy, my dad and our whole family started back to church.
Bert Harper on the Word of God.
And the church I went to, the pastor really preached the Word of God with conviction. I knew that it was a book that we could depend upon and live our lives by. And I hope I bring that same passion into exploring the Word.
Exploring the Word with Bert Harper and Alex McFarland. Weekday afternoons at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
Here's Dr. Michael Kruger from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
Every day, people are faced with critical questions about what to believe and how to act and how to think and what things they should accept in culture and what they should reject. These are very life-centered questions and important questions that people want to know the answers to. And if they can't trust the Word of God for the answers to those things, they're going to go other places to get them. And so, at stake in the battle for the Bible is the daily life of each individual believer. We want them to have confidence in the Scriptures of the Word of God, that they can turn back to that every day, they can rely on it, they can trust it as a guide, and we want them to be spending time in it, devotionally, in the Scriptures, absorbing it, thinking about it. And so if the church loses its way and loses its trust in the Bible, then the ramifications on the practical day-to-day life of believers is going to be enormous.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. By January 12th, President Trump will either affirm his support for the people of Iran and his opposition to the regime that represses them and threatens us, the very antithesis of Barack Obama's policy, or he will effectively join Obama in propping up the mullahocracy by further waiving sanctions against it. The choice would seem to be a no-brainer. After all, Donald Trump has already established that the Obama-bomb agreement that the previous administration claimed justified a suspension of crippling sanctions is the worst agreement ever negotiated. It's also being violated by the Iranians. Yet, some of Mr. Trump's subordinates claim the deal can be fixed as long as we keep working with the mullahs. But that means continuing to legitimate and economically aid them, which would amount to Obama 2.0. Not Trumpian solidarity with our natural allies, the Iranian people. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You know, when I talk to people, I go out and speak, or sometimes I email, Facebook, whatever. For years, this has been the case. People always ask me, what can I do? Because I present certainly a bushel barrel full of problems every day. What can I do? My response is just do something. Find something that really pulls at your heart, that you is in your sphere of possibility, and do something. Just do something. And I find it very therapeutic. And sometimes when you do something, that leads to doing other things. And so one of the things that you could do is help us raise money for Preborn. We're partnering with them. They are an organization that makes available ultrasound to hundreds of Christian pregnancy care centers around the country. And of course, you know that the ultrasound, I is really the thing that has changed the minds and hearts of so many young women around the country. Instead of aborting their babies when they've heard the heartbeat and seen the pictures that are so defined through these ultrasound, they change their minds. In fact, 80% of the moms who see these videos change their minds. And so if you would like to do something today, you're listening to all of this that may not be related to this, but I'm just telling you, we have lots of problems, and you can't solve all of them, and neither can I, but you can do something. And so if you would like to donate something and do something today, just call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can donate online at AFR.net. And just so you kind of have an idea, $28 will provide one woman seeking an abortion a free ultrasound. That's just $28. And, of course, you can do the multipliers after that. If you can give more than $28, it'll help more than one woman. And so I hope that you'll be generous, and I know you will. You always are. Our phone number is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or go online at AFR.net and make your most generous donation. Well, we're talking about whether the Congress, meaning the Senate and the House, will decide to make a grand compromise on immigration. And they're talking about DACA, but we know that the left is pushing for everything. They want everything. And we know that the Republican leadership is kind of okay with that. And the president has talked about it, too. So to me, it was very convenient that last night during the evening news, a story should break. And before I play it, I just want to prepare you. This is how this works. They want something to be done. And I mean, I'm not sure who they is. Establishment. That seems to be whether it's Republicans or Democrats. They and the Chamber of Commerce. They want amnesty. They want more foreign people made legal in this country. So suddenly a story appears, and it is written in such a way that it pulls at your heartstrings. And it's timed perfectly before major decisions are coming, and it presents the most sympathetic details possible. So as most Americans who are generous, as you, I know you are, just talked to you about that on the preborn thing, I know you're generous and that it pulls at your heartstrings, but some people do that to you in order to get an outcome. And so that's the way I felt about this report last night from Fox. Here's Rich Edson.
Donald Trump!
Shame on you!
Donald Trump!
Shame on you!
After nearly two decades of extensions, the Trump administration says it will allow Salvadorans' temporary protected status to expire, meaning Salvadorans who came to America after natural disasters in their homeland have a year and a half to leave the U.S. In January and February of 2001, two earthquakes in El Salvador killed more than 1,000 people. In March of that year, the Bush administration granted Salvadorans legal entrance into the U.S. under a humanitarian relief program that allows international victims of disasters and war to live and work in the U.S. until it's safe for them to return.
Give TPS holders, once and for all, a path for citizenship. These are people who have been living by the rules.
President Trump has phased out their protections far more aggressively than his predecessor. Administration officials contend El Salvador has recovered from the 2001 earthquakes and, as they did with Nicaraguans in November, argue it's time for those citizens to return home.
The name itself explains a lot of it. Temporary protected status. I believe the government looked at the situation there on the ground and assessed that it is no longer unsafe in that way.
The Department of Homeland Security says it covers 10 countries under temporary protected status. The Trump administration has announced it's phasing out protections for Sudanese, Haitians, and Nicaraguans, still reviewing the status of Hondurans and those from South Sudan. Citizens under these protections from Nepal, Somalia, Syria, and Yemen have several months remaining before the administration must make a decision. Democrats and even some Republicans argue these Salvadorans over the past 17 years have built lives in the U.S.
The potential implications in the hemisphere, and particular in El Salvador, could affect us here in the mid to long term in a very negative sense. But I understand why they're doing it.
Congressman Diaz-Balart also points out that many of these Salvadorans are raising children born here in the United States over the past 17 years. Those children are American citizens, and there's still a danger in El Salvador, he says, from drug and gang violence.
All right, so it hits all the hot spots. It's a natural disaster. It's earthquakes. And so we have sympathy. Of course we do. We brought them over here for humanitarian reasons. And so we go, wow, we should have, yes. But now they've built lives and they have children. And so how dare we even consider sending them back? And that's the way it's presented, and at a very convenient time. Daniel Horowitz of Conservative Review is with me this morning. Daniel, I'll just be quiet and let you comment on this. What are your thoughts?
You know, it's amazing. Everything on this issue is turned upside down, inside out. The law is lawless, and lawlessness is the law. They're forgetting. They think the world was created in terms of everyone has an entitlement to come here. It's their entitlement, and Trump ripped it away. In fact, Trump didn't take away their status. Trump restored sovereignty to Americans that was ripped away by previous presidents. Temporary protected status, and you know, as you heard from, I think it was Jessica Vaughn on that report, that the pro-sovereignty voice, that it's all in the word temporary. We have a lot of laws that have contingencies for them, that, hey, if there's a certain situation, we're going to allow people to this or that. And what's happened is over the years, the past presidents and Congress, they manipulate them, violate the letter and spirit of statute to ensure that the entire third world comes here and they come here indefinitely. It was designed for, you have an earthquake, a hurricane, and you need to live here for 6 months, for a year or so. Fine, we'll allow you to do it. It's a picture of a temporary visa. But when it runs out, you have to leave. You know, if you have a power outage in your house and I invite you over to my home for a night or two or three, you can't say, well, I love it here. I'm so used to it. I'm staying forever. So the joke is no one even remembers this earthquake. It's from 2001. It's 17 years ago. Nobody could say with a straight face that the conditions that persisted at the time to trigger the TPS status still persist. If you say, well, El Salvador is a miserable place, I heard on the report there it said it's violence. Okay, but that has nothing to do with TPS. Basically, we should have anyone from anywhere in Latin America, Africa, all these countries that have famine and hunger and strife and violence. But, then we don't have America. Change the law then. Make new laws. Trump is restoring the letter and spirit of the law. The other presidents played politics to ignore it. He is actually following the law. And there's another important thing here. Guess what the significance of El Salvador? It's the home of MS-13. So we have a lot of these problems here as well. They're not all, doing the jobs Americans won't do type of deal. Certainly it's a very impoverished population, on average much more so than even Mexican nationals. And it just, there's no benefit to Americans. So this makes no sense. America is not a dumping ground. And, our generosity on a temporary basis should not be used against us to make it just a perennial amnesty program. Oh, and Sandy, I forgot the most important note here that no one's going to tell you. Guess what? A lot of them didn't come because of the earthquake. A lot of them, particularly from El Salvador, more so than Nepal or some of these countries not connected to Mexico, guess what? These countries are the biggest sending countries of illegal immigrants. They were here illegally anyway, and they took advantage of the TPS status once the earthquake hit. So a lot of them are no different than any other illegal alien.
You know, there's another missing piece in this report. I was reading the exact order coming from which the surprising action of the new Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristen Nielsen. I don't think we've been a fan of hers. So it's pretty amazing that she made this order. So this is part of it. Following the 2001 earthquake, El Salvador received a significant amount of international aid to assist in its recovery efforts, including millions of dollars dedicated to emergency and long-term assistance. Many reconstruction projects have now been completed. Schools and hospitals damaged by the earthquakes have been reconstructed and repaired. Homes have been rebuilt, and money has been provided for water and sanitation and to repair earthquake-damaged roads and other infrastructure. The substantial disruption of living conditions caused by the earthquake no longer exists. And additionally, in recent years, the U.S. government has been repatriating individuals back to El Salvador, more than 39,000 in the last 2 years. So it's not really the full story. Daniel, to kind of infer we're sending them back to this horrible place where they will suffer. You know, when he ended the report by saying it's dangerous to go back because they have a problem with drugs and crime, I thought, well, isn't that, don't we have that problem? I mean, really? That's the reason?
we're going to start to create a refugee program from Chicago. I mean, it's gotten so bad there.
Exactly.
But, you're absolutely right, Sandy. This is the problem here from El Salvador. The notion that Trump is being heartless or how they built families here, it was temporary. It was a TPS, temporary protected status, to allow them here for 17 years and then still give them 18 months to leave. That's very generous. I mean, it makes no sense. And also, you brought up a very important point. They can't have it both ways. We've already given a tremendous amount of aid, as we always do after these natural disasters, to rebuild their countries in their home countries. So a lot of them, you know, you're not allowed to care about Americans. You're just not allowed to. So it's all about El Salvador. Fine. If you really care about El Salvador and you really say that these are the best and the brightest, most amazing people, all 150 IQs, all valedictorians, all serve in the military, you name it, well, why would we want to deny El Salvador of their best citizens?
I can't think of a reason. You know, I will interject one thing before I want to come back for the few minutes that we have left. My son has been in Canada for about 10 years. Now he's in Scotland. And I have to tell you, Daniel, to try to work in those countries for him or his wife, are you kidding me? They are so restrictive. And to try to stay, they have to beg for their visas every time they're up. And so I just want to kind of pour some reality here. Other countries don't do what we're doing. They're very, 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 very careful about who they allow in, and they don't allow you to work. They don't allow you to buy property. It's just amazing. All right, Daniel, we just have 2 minutes left. So today, as I understand it, there are some big, important meetings on this immigration deal. What do you expect to happen? What are you watching for?
Sure. I'm watching for a phony deal addressing our rhetoric, where they say, oh, we're going to do border security, and they'll throw $1 billion at vague border security. Oh, we'll do chain migration, and they'll invent something that doesn't exist. For example, they're talking about ending the practice of LPRs bringing in relatives. I got news for you. Under current law, they can't bring them in. It's when they become citizens. You know, things like that, bait and switch, replace one amnesty program with another. That's what it is. It's all just like my youngest son. He'll eat 3 granules of rice and 2 microscopic pieces of chicken. Oh, now I get my dessert. You know, that's what it is. Oh, here's some chain migration reform. So watch for the shiny objects that are cloaked in our language in order to get conservatives on board.
Daniel, who are the bad actors here? Jeff Flake, Lindsey Graham? You help me fill in the blanks.
Well, I mean, Senator Gardner from Colorado, he is the chairman of the Republican Senatorial Committee responsible for recruiting more Republican candidates, and he supports the Democrat position on immigration.
Okay, that's a problem. And, of course, yeah, all right, so there are lots of bad actors in this, and we'll have to watch them. We didn't even mention the Democrats. We just picked on Republicans. They're, you know, almost universal bad actors on the other side trying to press for this. But it's coming down January the 19th. That's the deadline, at least for this particular part of the discussion. And it's really kind of a mystery, so we don't know what's going to happen. But I think as we inform the people, it helps. Is there anything people can do? Should they be calling their congressmen, senators? They probably should. And asking for no deal, no DACA amnesty on this budget. That's what I'm thinking. I answer the question because I'm running out of time. Daniel, it's a pleasure always to have you. Thank you. We'll put your articles on our Facebook page and go forth and write something else really good that we can use. Thanks a lot, sir.
Will do. God bless.
Okay, talk to you later. Same to you. All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.